This is the First Time Podcast.
Part reality series.
Part writer's masterclass. It's a podcast about the first time
you publish a book.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to The First Time.
Catherine, you're back.
I am.
Tell us.
It's a distant memory.
Oh,
it's been
already?
A week.
Tell us everything. Tell us everything about it.
Well, I think you should tell us everything. You've annoyed a lot of listeners.
We did. Can we apologise? We did not mean to be clickbaity when we said that we were going to reveal news and then we failed to actually reveal it. It's just that what we've realised, haven't we, Catherine, in 2 years of doing this is that sometimes in our attempt to be candid and get information to all of you, we preempt ourselves and then
we say too much
and then our publishers say, we're not going to say that yet, really.
So we should say that when we first started the podcast, we had this brilliant plan that we had devised ourselves of we would start releasing podcast episodes in July of whatever year it was.
2018.
And then 2018. Yeah. And then we would release episode, and we would finish the first season with the launch of the helpline.
Yeah.
And it would be
in real time.
It would be this slow, amazing build.
Yeah.
And so we got to the first week when we were about 2 days before releasing the episode.
We've done
hugely
our
excited.
Very cool social media plan about how to get it all out.
And we're then advised, given very good advice my publicist at Text, Jane Watkins, who we have interviewed on a different episode of the podcast, that in relation to publicity, you want to keep the powder keg dry.
You do.
So what that means is, from a publicity perspective, you want to know nothing about something, and then you, in this instance, once the book is available, you want to know everything all at once.
Yeah. So this is our advice to you, dear listeners. Keep that journal of everything that has happened in terms of your research and the idea and where the book came
from.
All your little stories, all that little narrative. And then you hold on to that until someone tells you when to release it.
Yep.
Also, Catherine, because you've just been on I feel like saying it's world tour. It's not really a world tour. But you started off with a travel grant.
I did.
For research for the new book.
That's true. So I'm not really going to say a lot about the Toastmasters conference itself, but I did receive, I received a Sydney Neilmer travel grant, and that's probably one thing I would like to plug. So Sydney Neilmer.
Can't remember.
Really good travel grant. If you're looking for a grant that will, in my case, send me overseas, but can send you all sorts of places, it is administered through the Victorian Writers' Centre. It's actually a really easy grant to apply for. It's like a two-pager. And I know that I got a grant, but I also know that Heather from Fairfield Books in Fairfield in Melbourne is a bookseller who has also received a Sydney Neilmer grant.
Oh, fantastic.
And she's going to a booksellers conference, I think in the States as well.
I think
so. It has more widespread application than what you might think.
And it's open twice a year. Writers Vic have all the information up on their website, and they also have information like those FAQs, which are always really helpful. And I think from memory, the advice is don't make it your travel junket. You can't just get your flights to Paris because you're Paris
book. Unless you can justify it.
Yeah, you really need to justify it. But look into it. It is one way in which people in Australia are supporting artists to do their things. And don't we need that?
Good. I feel like the odds statistically are better than the odds for the Ozco grants.
Oh,
my
gosh.
Everyone get a rejection for that?
Congratulations
recently.
Congratulations to the people who were successful. That's great.
Good
for
you.
All of you.
Congrats.
We must talk about funding applications in one of these. So you did that. We're not going to talk about it too much. But then you flew into New York for the glittering, champagne-filled arrival. There were explosions and fireworks.
Oh, my gosh. Crowd-lined streets.
Of course.
Ticker-tape parade.
People stopped you in the middle of New York and said, are you Catherine Collette? Tell us, what happened in New York?
Wasn't quite like that. New York, so the book is already out in New York.
With that fabulous cover.
It's amazing, although they're redoing the cover.
What?
Yeah, so.
Why? On what grounds?
At the moment, yeah, I know, it's beautiful. So the book is only out in hardback at the moment, which really is a financial decision because people pay more for hardback than they do for paperback. But they will release in paperback in about 6 months after the hardback comes out.
And completely different.
Completely different.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. I'll show it to you later. Can I show it to you now?
Yes, you can show it to me right now. Pause. We'll hold.
Is working. So it's got a completely different vibe. It's much more, now her name escapes me, Rainbow Powell. Yes. Is that her name?
Rainbow Powell, isn't it? I don't know if you pronounce it. Our Oz-YA people will.
So they'll be releasing a different cover, which has a completely, and I think probably you would say less literary vibe, maybe.
Has it got a biscuit?
No biscuits. They're anti-biscuit in the, can't find it. I'll have to show you at another point in time. New York was fabulous. I hung out with a friend a lot. So we did Central Park and did a heap of walking.
Amazing.
Which was fabulous. But I say my agent, the agent that Text had engaged, David Forer. Hard name to say in Australian. You'd probably just say Forer. Took me out for lunch, which was great.
Oh my gosh. Lived the dream of having lunch with your New York agent in New York.
It was pretty cool, I must admit. It was really lovely. And then I went into Simon & Schuster, but it was basically, I feel like it was a long weekend where if you took 2 days, you got the whole week. So it was very, very quiet.
And it's the end of summer,
It's the end of summer.
It's like January.
Been out for a while, so it was a completely different vibe to the vibe a couple of days later when I went into the equivalent in London.
Okay, so because the helpline is not yet out in London.
It's out. So they do this interesting thing where, and I think they're just trialing a few different things. They're doing ebook for 6 months and they try to build buzz through ebook.
Sure.
And then they do the paperback launch in sort of 6 months after. So in January.
So ebook is out.
So ebook is out.
Okay.
Completely different vibe because they're still in that planning mode. So they were, talking about puff quotes, which is something we talked about recently on the show.
Amazing.
And talking about, scheduling and what supermarkets they've got so far and
incredible.
All this sort of stuff. So that was a pretty amazing experience. You do also the pragmatic or part of you. I mean, God, they're so, so lovely to you. But they're also busy. It's sort of an unnecessary, it's not a critical meeting by any stretch of the imagination. So while it's hugely special and amazing for me, you can't help think, God, they must be. They've probably got 10 other
people
things
lined
to
up.
Be doing.
And I think, you know what I think they do so well? Like, we're saying this because
they
now
make
we're
you feel so, special.
So kind of what, we're so woke to what publishers are doing because we've got all of one book each out into the world. But I think also, I think Jane talked about it or gave us the impression when you interviewed her. It's their job to make all of us feel like we are the only person being published by them. And it's lovely when you do feel that. And it's also lovely to take off the rose-colored glasses and realize that everyone else is getting this same special deal. And that's part
of
the gig that we get.
One of the lovely things, the agent that Text had engaged in the UK, she's got an agency and they operate out of a bookshop. And so the bookshop is two stories. And on the bottom level, there is what appears to be a wall of books. And it's actually a secret hidden door move. And then the agency is actually behind the bookshop.
That is the coolest thing.
It's amazing.
Ever in the entire world.
It's really cool. Bookshop's
what is the name of the bookshop?
Notting Hill.
Oh my, of course it's in Notting Hill.
We'll do a link on show notes. It's phenomenal. Really, really cool.
I want that. I just want that right now.
You're getting a writer's studio built though, aren't you?
I am. Shh, don't tell the council. I am. And it's so exciting. And I've never been more excited in my entire life about having a room of my own. And not that you need that. Because, of course, as we know, you can write in Maccas.
You can write
You
anywhere.
Can write with the surfboard across your knees, the boogie board across your knees as a la Kate Grenville.
Amazing.
But but I have been working in the corner of our lounge room, and basically I'm about to be crushed by books, really. I mean, you know, honestly, that's what's going to happen.
I am kitchen table at home, which is...
I mean, kitchen. Right. I've actually moved out of the studio. Now I write on the kitchen table because the not the studio. My tiny little office is so filled with crap that I can't actually fit in there anymore. So it will be good to be able to separate to my as the accountant is now asking me to do, to separate the teaching writing me from the writing me.
And that
they
is
are two different income streams.
Yeah, that is an upcoming episode. We're going to talk about tax.
We are sexy tax.
Unrelated. Kate, have we got any exciting things coming up?
I have an exciting thing. I've got an exciting thing at Writers Victoria in November. It's the post-publication hustle. So it's for writers who have got maybe a book out in the world, maybe a couple of books out in the world, and we're going to talk creative resilience. We're going to talk the general hustle, how to keep going. Maybe things don't go your way.
Amazing.
How do you keep on writing and keep on doing the stuff?
Oh,
so check out
in the background.
Writers Victoria and all of their season two workshops because
they're
ace.
Phenomenal.
They're really ace. We'll put a link in the show notes. Today, I am very excited to be speaking with visiting Brisbane author Ben Hobson. Ben is a writer and teacher. Born in Gippsland, Victoria, he now lives in Brisbane with his family. In 2014, his novella, If the Saddle Breaks My Spine, was shortlisted for the Viva La Novella Prize run by Seizure Online. His short fiction has been published by Tiny Owl Workshop, Firewords Quarterly and Midnight Echo. His debut novel, To Become a Whale, was released in 2017 and longlisted for the Indie Book Debut Novel Award and the 2018 People's Choice Award in the Queensland Literary Awards. His new novel is Snake Island. Welcome, Ben.
Thank you very much. I am a, what's the word you can say, long-time listener,
first time
call.
Yes. We're so very glad to have you. Also because you have been on tour.
Yes, this is nearly the end of my book tour.
Okay, and you've been driving it on your own.
I know, yeah. So the publicity people just gave me some money and they said you can spend this however you like, so I opted for the cheapest possible option.
I thought you were going to say, so then I... Then I flew to Bali.
And then I'm back. Hired this little van. It's actually cheaper to hire a van with a bed in it and a kitchen than it was to hire a car.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. Have you done a camping tour?
Yeah. So I've been going to all the little camping spots and I've been freezing cold in Sydney especially. And it's a little lonely, I have to say, because I'm used to having
lonely
my two little boys.
Yeah, okay.
And I went and saw Spider-Man.
Without them?
Yeah.
You went and saw it without them?
I did.
What are they going to say when you get home?
I don't know. I haven't told them yet.
Don't tell them. Just pretend you haven't seen
it. As I walked from Spider-Man Far From Home, I was a lonely figure in a crowd, sea of people.
Oh, gosh.
I had to make some jokes, but no one was all there to listen.
Oh, you're plucking at all the heartstrings.
Yeah, yes.
So it's been a lonely old tour. How many stops? How many stops have you done?
Oh, gosh. I don't even know. I've come through New South Wales, went to Tamworth, then went to sort of Newcastle, then Sydney for a few nights, then Canberra, and then down to Gippsland.
Yep.
So I got to do a fun little event at...
In your hometown.
In my hometown. And, you know, walking around Brisbane, no one really recognises me, but in Yarram, they had an event and my face was in every storefront.
Oh, my gosh. How did that go? Walking down Main Street with your mum.
Took a long
time.
Chest
is all puffed out. There's so much pride there.
I don't know. It felt strange too, though, because everyone wants to know about everything to do. It's such an interesting thing. It's hard to sum up very quickly what writing a book is.
Of course.
So
and
it
then
took
there's,
a while.
Might I add, the added complication that Snake Island is a book about a small town.
Yes.
Where there's some pretty hardcore stuff going on.
Yes.
And.
Yes. So it is completely set. I can say, I'm going to say, it's set completely in my hometown of Yarram, Gippsland. I don't know how many of them.
For our Yarram listeners, you now know, Ben has spilled the beans.
I did.
So,
but wait, I need to make sure I say
that
for legal reasons, I did, and I did change a few things, obviously, and paint a little bit of a worse picture, but I did use the setting of Yarram. So I've changed all the names in the novel.
Just so you don't. get dragged before a court.
Yeah, well, if I name a character like Vernon,
yep,
and there's only 2,000 people in Yarram, which is true, and there's one Vernon,
yep,
he can say, oh, well, I'm the Vernon from Yarram. And
of course.
Not that I think he would, but you never know with that sort of
thing. You never know. So at your event in Yarram, where was it?
In the Yarram Library.
In the Yarram Library. How many people rock up in Yarram?
Well, there are actually a record-breaking number of 72.
72.
I know.
Now, for our listeners who have not yet had the pleasure of rocking up to do a library event when they've been asked, library events can really vary, can't they, Ben?
So, I did a few on the way down. I had lucky to get four.
Exactly. It's cold. It's winter. Sometimes no people turn up. So 72 is outstanding.
Yeah, and so they were very delighted to tell me that I actually don't know her name, the person who wrote The Dressmaker.
Rosalie Ham.
Rosalie Ham.
Yeah, she's actually alumni of RMIT.
Oh, is she? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, look, not to cast aspersions on people, she only got 70.
Oh, so you are record breaking.
All of them told me.
I can imagine that they did. I can imagine that they did.
Hometown pride.
Tell me, Ben, so there's that idea of visiting, you know, that lovely thing of being able to go to your hometown and the support that you have there.
Yeah.
What does publicity say to you? Get to as many bookstores between Brisbane and Melbourne as you physically can?
Yeah. Well, they organise all of the different stores.
So they just say, give us a route and you follow it, and we'll let every store know that you're coming, every library, etc.
Yeah, and they check that to make sure that there's the book in stock. So I'm not, hey, I'm here, my name's Ben.
Which is always so awkward. So awkward, because authors walk into bookstores, again, for our listeners, and not necessarily do they get recognised.
No, in my experience, never get recognised.
Yeah, and in fact, I can't even remember. Someone will have to tell me who told us a story where they walked in and picked up their book to sign it, and the bookstore owner wouldn't let them because they couldn't be sure that they were the actual
author. Just a random person saying that they're the author of this book.
Very awkward. Okay, so
it is. Can I just say, that is probably one of the most awkward things that I've started to get used to, but it's so nice that publicity have called ahead, because when To Become a Whale came out, I just, hi, my name's Ben, I wrote
that book,
that's my book.
Yeah.
They're like, oh.
It's very awkward.
It was super awkward.
But there's a reason publicity do that, and that is because putting your physical self in a bookstore, meeting bookshop owners is really, really important, right?
It's. I think it's probably one of the most important things. I think booksellers, I mean, it's in their title, they sell the books.
Yeah.
And so when you meet a person, and can I just say, every single one of them tends to be lovely and really excited to meet you. When you get to actually be a presence and tell them your story and get to be friendly, and then the idea would be that, and then someone comes up and says, have you got any good books? This guy just came in, signed the book. He was really lovely.
He told us a bit about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so people who are preparing to do this, what do you have in your head? Is in your head, walk into a bookstore, just let me be the nicest person I possibly can. I'm going to stop by for 15 minutes. Like, what's your kind of plan?
Yeah, because you don't want to come off as knocking on the door, Seventh-day Adventist. Hey, I'm here to, sell you.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to either, because I do genuinely want to meet people.
Absolutely.
Like, I think one of the best parts of doing this and getting to go into those bookstores is you get to genuinely meet friendly people and people who love books like you do. So I definitely try to put out of my head that I'm selling myself.
Yeah. You're in a collaborative relationship of sorts with the bookseller.
Yeah. And all I try to do is just to be genuine and listen to what they have to say. And I ask, this seems like a really lovely store. What have you been doing? How's your day? And just be kind,
excellent.
I guess.
Okay. This is good advice. Be kind, people.
Be kind. Yeah. And I do fear that there might be authors who, and I did hear a few stories on the way.
Okay, what
I'm
not
naming
to do.
Names.
Don't name names, but listen very carefully between the lines here, because Ben's going to tell us what not to do when you visit bookstores as an author.
So what not to do is to go and say, hey, you've got some of my books, so can I sign them? Oh, yeah, okay, see ya.
Wow.
And I think just because let's be sympathetic. You get into a thing where you're just getting from one thing to the next.
But still,
you got to take a little bit of time.
Take a little bit of time.
To invest, I think.
Okay, good advice. Now, for your first book, To Become a Whale, which came out in 2017, did you do this same process?
No, that was very different.
Yeah.
And I didn't get as much push from publicity as I am getting this time.
Okay.
It was my debut novel. I hadn't had a lot of you know, short stories and things published in the lead up. So
maybe something to do with the second novel, but I also think it's getting more popular. People seem to be doing the kind of East Coast tour in whatever way they possibly can, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and it actually has been a bit disquieting, I guess, because every single bookseller says, oh, you must be really excited. This is your first book. No, I had another book out, actually. It came out 2 years ago. And they're like, oh, really? What's that called? It's called To Become a Whale. Oh, I haven't.
Wow.
It's been a bit like, oh, okay. Because I think what happens is the books can go into the stores.
Yep.
And then if they don't sell, they very quickly
get back out again.
Push out of the store. So they don't have a memory of a thing.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
I mean, how much difference has it made that I get to actually be a person to these people?
Yeah, for sure. Well, because also for their stats or their internal record or whatever, as soon as you sell one of those signed books, then the computer recognizes it, whatever, they're going to maybe sell another.
Much more so.
Okay. Can you tell me, we normally start with the first time, but I was just so excited to ask about your tour that I just went on. For To Become a Whale, how did that come into the world? How did you go from person sitting at home scribbling your short stories to yourself to publish?
I was terrible at short stories.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Even though you got a couple published.
Yeah, that's a miracle.
Okay. All right.
It's an art, hey, like short stories.
It really is. We've talked about it on the podcast, saying it's actually harder to get a short story published in this country at the moment than it is to potentially get a novel published.
And it's also, you have to wait.
Yeah, you have to wait. That's true.
Like, I waited a year and a half to hear back from certain magazines, and then I got a form rejection. And it's like, oh, gosh. And you can't multi-submit either. Like, they sort of, and I get it.
Yeah.
And I also get they're reading thousands, but yeah, it is a bit hard to be a persevering person through that, yeah.
So how did you persevere? So were you working away on your novel? Is that?
Novels. Yeah.
Multiple.
Yes.
Are you one of those people like Robert Lutkins who's
not
got them under his
extreme,
bed?
Not quite that extreme, no.
No, okay.
They are somewhere.
All right.
On old computers, I think, lost forever. No, so I was in a band I was actually listening to your Bram Presser interview today.
Also in a band.
Yeah, he was a bit more successful than we were.
He's pretty rockin'.
He was, yeah. He still looks rock and roll too.
Yeah. Oh, God, come on, we all look rock and roll, right? We're authors.
I'm wearing a cardigan.
that's part of the brand. It's part of the brand.
Sure. I'm like a folk rocker.
Yeah.
So I was in a band in Victoria, and I'm tragedy struck, and I met a girl up in Queensland. And
how it happens.
I had to move up to be with her. Turned out to be a great decision. But when I did that, I left the band, and I left that sort of creative outlet that I'd had. And so when I got up there, I just wanted to create something. And I'm a bass player, so when you try to write a song as a bass player, it just...
Not doesn't work.
No one goes to bass player gigs, unless you're Victor Wooten or something.
Okay.
But I ended up... Lena, actually, my wife, said to me, why don't you try writing? Because you read all the time. Why don't you
and
just
at this
have
stage,
a go?
Are you already... You're an English teacher as well. Were
not
you
at that stage. I was at university studying music.
All right.
And I thought, okay, well, I guess I'll give it a shot. And so I just started to write absolutely from nothing.
Yeah.
And having no clue what I was doing. And then I started to invest online and trying to teach myself. And because I was at the university too, I had access to the library.
Fantastic.
And so I read every single book.
What are some of the ones that stood out to you at that time? Don't ask.
No, that's okay. I can't. Stephen King's On Writing was a big one.
Yep. Hugely influential for lots of people.
And I've still got that one. I still hold that one. I don't know. I just read.
Okay,
I feel like
but you're
hundreds.
Writing about, you're actually reading about the craft too.
Yes.
So you're reading books, you're reading fiction,
yes.
and you're reading about the craft,
yes.
working out how to make yourself a better writer.
And then I was just enjoying it.
Okay.
Yeah. And I wrote, it was like 40,000 words of some dystopian young adult thing.
Nice.
No, it was.
Okay.
It was
practice novel.
Yeah, and that ended up just going in the bin just from my own. I just read it back. I was like, this is no good.
Okay.
And then I wrote a whole other novel just on a laugh. I was reading William Faulkner at the time.
As
so
one does.
What I tried to do was copy his style, put it into a horror thing. So
nice.
I had 16. You know, what?
Again, didn't work.
No, and so I'd started to also read about like what you can do with your novels.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd submitted it to agencies, which I'm embarrassed about now.
That's
and
okay.
I got form rejections and things like that.
Any feedback at all? at any stage? No?
No.
All right.
No feedback.
Straight out.
No writing community. Nothing.
Okay. So what in that moment there, this is what I'm really interested
in. This is book one, by the way.
But what keeps you going? You're just really enjoying it, or you're stubborn, or you knew that ultimately you would succeed? What keeps you going there in that moment?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And I guess if you could bottle that and sell it, you'd be a millionaire. Yeah,
exactly.
I guess there's just this part of me that always wants to, when you read it like a really, really good book, and it makes you, when you shut that page, I've got a copy of my own book on the thing, but you shut that page and you just take a quiet moment and you slide it across and just sit and have a think.
Yeah.
And that is such a magic thing. And I think it's probably one of the last excuses we have to have those introspective moments. Like I was reading Lenny's Book of Everything by Karen Foxley.
Yes.
And I was reading that and I did that. I had one of those moments with that book and I shut that page and I just had a moment. And then I went in and had a look at my kids, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know whether, and I might have just been naive and being stubborn as well, but I just wanted to create something that would give someone that feeling. Yeah. And I knew, I felt like that first novel would be good. Like I was fully convinced that it was something decent. But then when I read it back, like even a few months later, I was like, no, I'm not quite there yet.
Okay. So
there was a time when I was a kid, I went to KFC.
Yep.
And it was the worst experience at KFC I ever had. And I just wanted some popcorn chicken. I stood in line for an hour and a half.
Why?
Because I wanted the popcorn chicken. And once you're there for 30 minutes, you're committed.
I feel like we can finish the interview there because it's really just quietly evident the kind of level of perseverance you've got in there, Ben.
Well, hey, you know, we can't all stand in line for an hour and a half.
It's but so true.
It did feel pretty good when I got that popcorn chicken.
I can imagine it did. So, because I've read up a little bit on you and I've been reading your blog, which is great, and we'll link to it. Eventually, you have your book, Popcorn Chicken Moment, which is that you hear back from an agent.
Yes.
Tell us what that felt like. Who is it and what did you hear?
Okay, so what happened was I wrote just a short. Every single one of these is like the biggest and most important. Like you spend years on these things.
I hear
right?
you.
So yep. I'm not shortcutting it. I wrote two other whole novels.
Okay. So, and what are we talking about time-wise here? Like, is this over 10 years? Is this over 5 years?
All up to where I am now. I started writing about 11 years ago.
Okay, great. All
right. And so I had those novels and both just rejections, and I felt I was getting better, but they were just not good yet. And then I started to work on To Become a Whale. Mm-hmm. And when I finished that novel, I thought, this is the end. Like, this is the best thing that I can do. I can't keep persevering.
If this doesn't go somewhere.
Okay. And then I did a very silly thing.
Oops.
Yeah, I put all of my hopes and dreams onto the Vogel Awards.
Okay, and how did that go?
Which is ridiculous in hindsight. It didn't go the way I was hoping it would go. Okay. I got longlisted.
Yep.
Which is,
That's huge.
That's huge, yeah. Let's not short. But it wasn't.
You wanted to win.
Yeah, it wasn't
the
dream. Yeah.
Okay, we can't all be Winton.
No. No, we can't all be Winton. So I had actually got on the form. They actually had feedback.
Amazing.
And it was some of the first feedback I'd ever gotten on a novel that I'd written from industry people, right?
Also, let me just say again, you were long listed for the Vogel. All right, okay.
You're making me feel good even now.
Okay, good.
And so on the thing, it said, this is a beautiful story of masculinity and father and son relationships. And it went on and on, which was lovely.
Amazing.
And then it said, it doesn't quite reach the dramatic heights that it was aiming for. And you can see that I've got that memorized.
Yeah, right? I can.
Because something that I'd started to do with my writing was try to go far more subtle to the point where I'd taken drama and tension out of it.
Don't you? That's such a first book thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you talk to all these people writing their second books and I'm like, getting some more plot back in there, right?
Yes.
Because your first books are so beautiful and thinking books. Okay.
Yes,
so
exactly. Yeah.
You had thinking to book.
So I went back through.
Yeah.
And prior to that, there were no sort of moments. Because at the start of the novel, the mum, we're at her funeral and Sam, the young protagonist, is at his mum's funeral and we have it from there. And the thing struck me, I never actually get to really show you that Sam misses his mum.
Yeah.
Right? And so it came to me, I need to show their relationship. I need to show his loss. And so I went through, and so all the flashback chapters came from that realization.
Amazing.
Yeah. It felt like one of those drop moments.
Yeah.
And then I actually took the Vogel Award feedback.
Yes.
The Powerful's Tale of, and I put that, I literally copied it and put it into my agent's submission.
So good. So smart. Everyone, just take that note down.
Because I had never realized what my book was.
Yeah. Oh, you need someone to reflect it back to you.
You do.
I think that that's such a useful thing to do, and I do this all the time. I ask people in my writers group, can you please write and say what this is about, and I'll send that line out to an agent, for instance.
Because I didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that I'd written about masculinity, and that's what that book is.
You need it reflected back.
Yeah.
So you send it out to numerous people, or?
I think I sent it to numerous people, but only because they actually say don't do multi-submits to agents, but I was at my last...
Yeah,
like
you were
I was.
Done.
Yeah,
you I'm know, not taking any advice.
You know those people in the marathons, the footage of them where they've lost their mental capacity and they're just like,
tottering? You are about to stumble over the line.
Yes. So, and then that was it, and I was just, I'm done. I gave up pretty much. This is the last thing.
This is the last thing.
And if it hadn't have gone anywhere, who knows? May have come back to it eventually, but I was pretty burnt.
Yeah.
After 9 years, it just burns you out. It's hard.
It really does.
And then I was driving home from work and I got a message on my phone, just an email that just said from my agent, Gabby Nayer. And she said, I love this. Is this represented? Can you please give me a call as soon as possible?
Oh, the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm imagining you can remember with clarity, like what the day was like, the smells in the air.
I remember making the phone call very quickly as soon as I got home.
Yeah.
To Gabby and pacing my backyard. And I remember the feeling of like, if I say something stupid,
this is all going to end
just burn
in tears.
It, yeah. But I didn't say anything too stupid, which is good.
Okay. So from that moment, she represents you. It eventually goes to publishers. How long are we talking between that phone call and publication?
It was about November or December. So she said we'd wait until late January where everyone's sort of back from vacation.
Yeah.
And we did a couple of passes on it. So she gave me some really helpful notes that I got to incorporate. And then she actually said, I've sent this out now to people. Like,
So you weren't even in the moment of terror. Fantastic.
And I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's fine. And then offers came in from people and these like beautiful letters from publishers. We love this and we want to, and it's just, it's such a strange feeling to have 9 years where what you're producing is worthless.
Yeah.
It's how it feels.
It can really feel like
it
that.
It feels like that. And then it feels like on a dime. All of a sudden, it's worth something. Mm-hmm. And it's this because I hadn't changed, I hadn't changed my process. I just worked and worked and worked. And it was like it was finally being recognized, I guess, by industry people. Yeah. It's
a wonderful feeling. I know exactly the feeling you're talking about. And I think that it's a wonderful feeling, but it's also very unsettling and decentering. And I think that it can be, it's wonderful and it makes you... so excited and so high and so validated.
Yes.
But at the same time, because you know you haven't changed anything, it also makes the whole thing a bit like Emperor's New Clothes. Like, how does this industry work?
Yeah, it does. And I'm still wondering.
Yep. And
there's still no magic glue.
Continue to wonder. Okay, so I want to move on from To Become a Whale, wonderful book.
Thank you.
To something that I saw on your blog. I'm going to quote back to you, even though you said you hate this. You say
it's
this
because I don't remember what I've said.
You say this about writing Snake Island, and I think a lot of our listeners will really, really relate to this. You said, it has taken all of me to write it, and I say that truly. I have put every ounce of me into it and then some more. It is the most rewarding artistic endeavor I've ever been on. Snake Island sounds like it was hard to write. Where did it begin for you?
Yeah, it was hard to write, and it's a different book. It's a different book. So it was actually even hard to think about starting it because you know how you hear about authors writing outside of their zones, etc.
Yeah.
It was just a bit of a sad story. My Auntie Rose got very sick very quickly and we live up in Brisbane. She was in Victoria and we knew she had cancer, but it just all of a sudden got very bad and she had to be in, isolation and taken in, and Dad called and said, oh, she might not last much longer.
Yep.
And so my wife and I decided very quickly to pack the kids into the car and drive down the Newell Highway.
Yep.
Just go and we'll be there. Which, you know, my kids were 2 and 4 years old and you've just been on a road trip.
Yeah,
right?
I have. I feel your pain right there. That's a hard trip.
It wasn't too bad because we started at 5 p.m.
Okay.
And so we just drove through the night. So the kids slept and Lena slept, but I drove.
Okay.
And so in the midst of worrying about Auntie Rose and, you know,
trying to... Are we going to get there on time and all
those
things?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I was also trying to stay awake. And so I decided to... Because To Become a Whale, I just finished the edits on it.
Yep.
So I thought, okay, well, I guess I'll plot...
Start
another,
thinking about something
not?
New.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's also fun and distracting.
It's such a nice part of writing.
It is, yes. And so it had been a while where I'd been watching TV shows like Justified and Fargo.
Yep.
And one of my favorite things is small town people who get in over their heads with criminality and yet they still have these small town values. I don't know why. It just strikes me as fun.
Yeah. And I tell you what, you explore it very well.
Yeah, thank you.
With great skill.
Thank you. So... I was, I've lost my train of thought.
So you're coming down the highway.
Yeah.
It's night. You're trying to stay awake.
Yes.
You've been watching these TV shows.
Drinking a lot of caffeine.
Yeah.
And it struck me that I was actually from a small town. Why can't I actually write this? And that's when I sort of got jazzed.
Yeah.
We could write this thing.
This is it. This is the story.
And as I was driving down, I'm kind of an idiot with GPS as well.
Okay.
And so when you're driving down that highway,
yeah.
If you just blindly follow the GPS, it'll take you on all these detours because you might save 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But they're so dangerous at nighttime and it was so dumb. But I just, because I was just
You were just following.
I'm just going.
Just tell me where to go.
And there are all these kangaroos lining the sides of the road.
Yeah.
And so it struck me that that would be a really interesting thing to have, a very particularly Australian thing, to have a kangaroo crash in a car and have, you know, all these elements sort of spring from that. So that was... Because you get asked a lot, where do your ideas come from? And that's one specific thing I can point to.
Great answer.
Yeah, that. Absolutely. And then Auntie Rose did pass away, which was pretty sad. And I ended up being so sick from the drive too. Like I was just depleted. I didn't even get to see her. But
oh, that's so hard.
Yeah. But we got to be there for my mum and my kids were a
which
good distraction.
Often
yeah.
The most important part.
Actually, because you've got an advance, I actually dedicated it to Auntie Rose.
Ah, oh, that's really lovely.
Yeah. And it was nice talking about her at the library event in Yarram yesterday as well. Had a few of her classmates and stuff were there.
That's pretty nice.
It was nice. They were a bit upset. But
and obviously her presence is a really important one for the novel.
Yeah, she... I said this at the library event as well, but I can't tell all the stories about Auntie Rose publicly. She was sort of the... Because I grew up in like a conservative small town and grandma... was there last night, her mum.
You definitely can't
tell. So I'm not telling all the stories about Auntie Rose, but she was a bit mischievous.
Sounds like a character.
Yeah, she was rad. So she did inspire a lot of the characters in the book.
You, I have seen, had that idea in your head about the plottiness of this book.
Yes.
And you actually did, because I've looked at the picture on your blog, you did the whole cards thing.
Yeah, for the first time.
Okay, how did it work? Tell us.
Well... as I was sick in Victoria, I sort of finalised a few ideas in my head. And then when we made it back to Brisbane, I bought some cards. And then I decided I was, because there's 6 different characters.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to keep track of it. So I just put their names on the cards as I felt the plot would progress. And it was just sort of a loose map. And it was really helpful. Like I had it up on my bedroom wall. So every morning I'd get up and I'd see it.
Yeah.
And I could sort of chart where, like, this character's getting highlighted. And just so I wasn't going to invest too much in one person over at the expense of the others.
Sure.
Emotionally tracking everything and drawing big arrows. It was a bit of a mess in the end.
So can I ask, because we've got a lot of people I know who listen who use Scrivener.
Yes.
Do you use that as well? Or was this like your no-frills version of Scrivener on your wall because that works better for you?
It did work better. I'm actually using Scrivener now. But
okay.
I've got the hang of... It was a bit overwhelming.
Oh, I still can't use it. I've tried twice and I still can't use it.
Because all the different tabs, but I've got it set up now, so it's very similar to that cue card thing.
Yeah.
And something that I really value in my writing is to write quickly. So I sort of see it like acting.
Yep.
Yeah, so because I sort of try to embody what the scene is doing. And I did a test the other day. I can actually write at 90 words per minute.
Great. That's very impressive.
Okay,
so you get down like a draft zero.
yeah.
kind of thing, in those, and then you just move forward?
Yeah, Snake Island took 3 months to write.
Far out.
I know.
That's really quick. Okay, so at the end of that, you've got this,
very
what
rough.
I hope is a mess.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's got this heart in it that's very authentic.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of moments in there that are very rough.
Yeah.
And I like those spiky rough bits. Like, and I feel like if I overthought it, I'd take all the character out of it.
That's really interesting.
So when I go quick
and
I can inhabit what the characters are doing, I can sort of feel how they'd react and what they'd focus on. And so if I'm drawn to suddenly start to write about a tree, I guess I'm writing about a tree.
Yeah, right.
And hopefully from that subconscious place, interesting moments happen.
So tell me, in that 3 months,
your
writing practice, however you do it, at night or
a thousand words a day at night,
mm-hmm. do you read back?
No, not
Go
once.
Go straight forward.
Yeah, don't read back at all.
Do you have to get 1,000 words?
Yes.
You can't leave the chair until you have?
No.
What time is this?
Probably around after the kids are in bed, between 8 and 9, 9.30.
Okay, so a really dedicated practice to get this out.
Yeah, sometimes it takes me 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then I'm done.
And do you allow yourself to write at any other time of the day? Like you've got a spare session before lunchtime
if
at school?
If I had the time,
I would.
Yeah,
right, okay.
But I don't.
Okay, so it's not that you're saying I can only write at this time.
Yeah,
it's
I'm not very precious.
It's just
that
you're a busy man with a job and 2 children.
And 2 children, yeah. But getting into the habit of doing that and then not, I don't think I could, like I hear some authors say they took years.
Yeah.
And I just think that would be painful.
Yeah, well, I'm sure it is for them too. So tell me, Ben, you've got that big messy document. What happens next?
Well, then with this, it was actually really good. So I wrote it in about 3 months and then To Become a Whale came out.
Yeah, nice.
And so I just put it away.
Oh, you did the thing. You had it before the other book
came
out.
I know.
I remember us, as a background note, Ben and I met at Brisbane Writers Festival.
Yes.
You were a very, very
new,
green,
very green
debut novelist in the green room. And I was lucky enough to get Brisbane kind of the second year after my book had come out. So I had, this was the long tail of mine. Mm. So I was feeling a little more comfortable with the whole world. And you said it and I was so jealous. You were like, yeah, I've got this draft down. And at that stage, I think I had about a page of my new novel. And I was far out.
I haven't done the same thing again though. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's good.
But and then I got to let it sit and then I came back to it. Man, it was much more objective. You know how they say, put it away and you can come back. I did that. And I couldn't remember writing parts of it and I got to just strip things. Like I was just very, and because I do it quickly, it's like it's not as precious.
Yes.
And I'm just like, no, that's garbage. Get rid of that.
Okay. Can I ask you this practically?
Sure.
Because these are the things that I Google when I'm in the middle of this practice. part of the practice, that document, do you like save it, then save it as a new version and just massacre it as you go through? Or are you... Like, what does that
next draft look like? Yeah, I don't. I just save it and just keep writing, and then
and delete whole things. Do you save those things? Is there a dump file? No, they're gone forever. They're gone forever.
Sometimes I save, like, if it's a significant version, I'll save a version and I'll put it away in a different folder and then work on a new thing.
Yeah,
but no, I'm kind of just a bit instinctual.
All right, so chronologically through beginning to end, or do you stick with a character?
No, I just read it through from the start to the finish. But I also like, you know, writing is not just sitting down typing. So
absolutely.
I spend a lot of time thinking about it. So sometimes I'll get home with an idea. Okay, this character needs to go. So there's a character in the book called William Kelly and he's a minister. And like interspersed throughout the novel was a sermon that he was writing.
Yep.
And so he's actually writing it in the book.
Yeah.
And as I was reading it back, I was like, these are garbage. And so I just got rid of them.
Okay. All right. So
it was one of the most exciting things about the idea of the book was writing that. And it's like that whole thing, kill your darlings, I guess.
That was the thing that had to go.
Yeah. And I'm okay. Like, it doesn't hurt me when I do that
because
every step you do that, because I wrote those words so quickly too, it doesn't feel like wasted time.
No, and it got you to the place that you understand about the novel to
exactly,
be able to do the next thing.
So thematically, a lot of what he was saying is still in the novel. But it wasn't necessary to have those moments.
Okay. When...
These are good questions, by the way.
Good. I'm glad. As Snake Island was ready to come out into the world,
mm-hmm.
how were your feelings different from when To Become a Whale came out? Were you more scared, more excited. You knew what a review might look like. You knew that there was a Goodreads with your name on it already. How are you feeling?
I'm terrible with Goodreads.
I look
at it all the time.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Like, I don't know whether you're supposed to keep that private. I just look at, I refresh Goodreads multiple times a day.
Okay, and
Genuinely don't mind, though, if someone doesn't like the book.
Okay, so what do you do with that, with those things that you're seeing, those reviews?
The reviews?
Yeah.
I just enjoy reading people's takes on it. I don't mind when people don't like it.
They're very centered. This is good.
I guess so. I'm not in all ways. Okay. Sometimes I get a bit insecure and self-doubty for sure, but I don't know, for some reason I'm just like, okay, they didn't like it, that's fine.
Okay.
I just sort of know that. But with this new one, going back to your question, I felt probably more pressure because I knew what to expect.
Yep.
And I knew also what to expect if people liked it, as versus, you know, a lot of people like it versus a small amount of people like it. And I also, to become a whale, it was sort of, it felt accidental.
Yeah.
It felt like I'd tripped over and written this book accidentally. And I didn't really have a plan and thought about, like, this is who I want to be as a creative person. This thing just came out of me.
I so relate to that. But also you don't realize that the world expects you to be a certain person who writes a book, that there's a narrative that's expected to go along alongside your book about who you are as a creative person.
Absolutely. And it is very confronting because I love that book and there's a lot of raw parts of myself in it and I'm still really proud of it. But it is a different type of book than the books I enjoy reading. And it's like I just threw paint at a wall and then all of a sudden there was this impressionist thing on there and I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's what I've done. But with this one...
I feel like you're underplaying your first book, but yeah, okay, we'll leave that and keep going. With this one, you feel like this is more in line with your creative...
Yeah, it's more thought out.
Okay.
I feel like To Become a Whale is my heart,
and
this is my heart, but I have craft now. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, it really does.
So I guess there's a little bit more pressure, I guess. And you just, obviously, with every book that comes out, you really want people to respond to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have made a somewhat controversial decision to include no acknowledgements.
Yeah, I didn't know it was controversial till you talked to me.
Yeah, because I saw this last night on your blog and I was like, are you serious, Ben? Tell me about the decision. And I asked this because I reckon people who, in their first book, I certainly did this. I can remember my editor saying, "Kate, you can't thank that many people. Like, let's just ease it back and you off." And I think that I've looked at people, particularly some, US writers I'm thinking of who like up to their eighth book and they have these gorgeous, brief, tiny little acknowledgements because they're just so on top of it and they're not gushing in the way that first novelists tend to gush.
Yes.
So I understand a little bit about where one might go with this, but still, no acknowledgements in your book.
I'm regretting it now. You've talked me into regret.
No, I didn't mean to do that. It was just a really interesting decision.
Well, so I was writing them.
Yep.
And struggling.
Yeah.
And just going on and on.
So you've hit 10 pages because you're thanking everyone.
Yeah, and I also... There's some weird part of me that also wants to thank, you know, the bully in high school who threw rocks at me or anal retentive boss who kept yelling at me when I didn't do things right. Because every single person in my life has made me who I am.
Yeah,
and I feel like it's acknowledgements. I need to acknowledge every person that I've met in my life. And I just...
So at some point you just said, bad luck, sorry, I'm not doing it.
And yet, with it, I will miss people who do genuinely help and encourage me. And I don't like the feeling of, I was always the one who was picked last at school for sports. Like, I don't like
You don't want to leave anyone out.
No, I don't. And so I talked to Robert Lukens. I sent him a message and he didn't put any acknowledgements in his book either.
Oh my goodness, I did not realize that. This is a thing you people do.
Yeah, and so I sent...
For the same reason?
Yeah. For a similar reason, at least from my memory, that's what he said.
Okay.
And he just personally thanked all the people that's what I've done as well. And that's why I wrote the blog as well.
Yeah.
So I can,
which is lovely and delightful, but I can see how you couldn't fit all those words into the back of your
book. And, you know, thanking aunties and cousins. And I just, it's, Yeah, I guess I personally thank everybody that I run into about it, because obviously it wouldn't be here without all these people in my life.
No, it's really great. It's like thinking outside the box.
Is it?
Well, I'm...
Because I just said, I said to the person who was helping me edit, I was like, do I have to do that? And she's like, no. I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I won't. And it wasn't, like, until you brought it up, no one's talked to me
it's
about it.
It's because I really enjoy reading acknowledgements, and I look at them and I do it for all sorts of reasons. I like to see who's in what writer's gang and who's got what agent, and then, you know, have people... thanked their it's friends like, from school.
They're like the liner notes in a CD.
Yeah.
Remember CDs?
Yeah, exactly.
And what other bands you tour with.
All of that.
And,
so I'm interested in them. And it was just because you clearly thought so much about it as well, because you had it in your blog. So thank you for answering that question.
No, that's okay.
There's lots of interesting things that go along with this book, because this book also has a soundtrack.
Yes. So that's actually in the back. It's got like a link to all the soundtrack. And so that came again, and like all good things in my life, instinctual. I was listening to my friend Chris Dicker, and he'd been writing these beautiful piano melodies, and I was listening to them on Spotify. And I thought, how cool would it be if a book had a soundtrack? And I'm like, okay, I guess I'll send him a message. And so I just emailed him, and he was like, oh, that sounds cool. And it just was naturally born from that. So it was sort of like just a little bit of a thought.
Yeah, I love
that. Would this work?
We will play a little section here, and we'll make sure that we include the link in the notes as well. So it's obviously been a creative process for him. He's composed it in reaction to the book, and they kind of sit alongside each other.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's really cool. I'm really proud of it. Obviously, I had nothing to do with it except, so I wrote the first draft.
Yeah.
So I sent that to him. And so then he came up with sort of some piano things and just coming up with themes. But we purposefully, I didn't say in chapter three, this event happens.
Yeah. Okay.
I was just like, do what it's like a creative spark sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then he sent me rough tracks. And then while I was editing, I got to listen to his tracks to inspire me to finish the book.
Love it.
Yeah.
It's a really great creative collaboration.
And there was actually a bit in the book. There's a young character named Amy. And there was a part in the book where it was set in the future. So you get to see what Amy's future's like.
Oh, wow.
And it wrapped up all these things. And it was like one of these neat little bow things. And Chris sent me an email well into the process. And he said, I've just composed a theme for Amy. And I love that chapter. I love everything about it. And I feel like this really sums up the novel. And I said, oh, Chris, I'm so sorry, mate. That was gone.
That
it's
was
been
cut.
Deleted. In, oh, no. But it's on the soundtrack.
That's so really interesting.
There's a ghost of that chapter now.
Yeah.
Orally that you can listen to.
That's really nice.
I love that stuff. It's really fun.
I like that.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, moving slightly away from your excellent books now and to the kind of author persona and the work of an author.
Sure.
Catherine and I feel now have taken the very easy route in doing a podcast and not having to put our faces behind something. You have got yourself a YouTube channel.
Yes.
Okay, tell us about this decision.
Yeah. It's again one of those decisions where I was like, why not? And I thought, oh, I guess it'd be cool to have a YouTube. I just, a lot of the stuff I do, I don't like to... If I think things through too much, I'll talk myself out of stuff.
Yeah, okay. So you jump straight in.
Yes.
I haven't gone in order, so I don't know what your first one...
I don't remember what it was
okay,
either.
But they're you talking about craft, so your own craft.
Yes.
And then you've also got you talking about other writers' craft. So
yes.
It's kind of a professional learning thing for other writers.
And I try to keep them fairly brief, but and it does they take a fair bit of work is the thing that's tricky with them.
This is what I wanted to ask you about. So in terms of that... kind of.
You have to get your hair done and like...
Yeah, well, all of that. Get the lighting right. Do your makeup.
Sure.
But in terms of the time that it's taking you, thinking about it, corresponding with people, I imagine, if they get in touch and things like that, do you feel on balance that it's added to your creative practice, that it's a good thing to do?
Yeah, it's a tricky thing, hey, and like the blog writing and anything.
All of it.
All of it sort of is not writing time. So it's all... I guess, I mean, they use that phrase author platform, but it's all about just getting out into the community, which is online.
Yeah.
I had a few people even come to some events on this tour and say they've been watching some of my videos.
Great.
Sharing them with other BookTube people. Okay. So there's a BookTube community.
There's a BookTube community.
Oh, you didn't know?
You're teaching me so many things. Oh,
okay,
right
it's
now.
Hashtag BookTube. And okay. So there's a big community. They're all on Twitter and they all share each other's stuff and
amazing. All
review
right.
books. They're really cool.
Okay, I'll be looking that up.
Yeah, and it's just another useful way to talk to people, I guess. And I have had ideas for podcasts too.
Don't go getting any ideas. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. There's enough ear space for everyone.
Yeah, but there's just it just takes work and yeah. time. And so I used to do, I had a camera set up with a proper mic and used to edit, and it just takes so long. Yeah. Like it takes a good couple of days per thing. And I know whether or not you've noticed with all the things I do, it has to be quick or I don't like doing it yeah. very much. So I've taken to now just recording on my phone, and that seems to be going okay. And I still edit
yeah.
afterwards because we don't all talk super articulately.
No, we don't. That's just why like we have people sentence. Like Phoebe who makes us sound amazing.
Thank you, Phoebe.
Okay, so on that then, that kind of balancing life and work, mm-hmm. because you are a teacher.
Yes.
As we said, you've got 2 young kids.
Yes.
You talked about getting the writing done
yes.
when you're in the writing period, so you're sure. getting those 1,000 words done a night. What about the rest of the business? What about the social media, the making sure you've got your author platform, going to other writers' events? How do you make that fit in? How are you conscious of making it fit in, I suppose, too?
Yeah, that's such a good question. It's the social media stuff isn't too hard.
Yeah.
Because it's so much fun.
Yeah.
It's a bit relieving.
That's a good point.
Like when you're working at work and you're in your lunch break, it's just so nice to check in. Oh, someone's read my book. Oh, that's
yeah,
so
that's
nice.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a nice little check-in and it keeps your mind active there. Getting to other people's like events and writers' events, you do have to sort of budget your time.
Yep.
You have to sort of know things in advance. But I have a really supportive wife and I just try to go to as many as I can just because I know how daunting it is to go to a city where you don't know anyone.
Yep.
Yeah, so there's been a few people who I've got to interview and things like that. And even just going to bookstores after some of my events, I've just said, I love talking. Like,
yeah, I give me a gig.
I get to interview Chris Hammer in
Fantastic.
October. Yeah, when his new book comes out in Brisbane.
Looking forward to that.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. I've actually got a copy. Yeah, I know. Isn't that nice when that happens?
I love it when you work out who's got the secret copies of what in advance. You're like, give me one of them.
Yeah, so it's really good. But it's just a community. It's such a community. And I've found time and time again that writers and readers like make the best people.
They really do.
Because they're empathetic. They've learned all this stuff from...
Yeah.
And you just get... you coming up and introducing yourself to me at the Brisbane Writers Festival is so nice.
Yeah. Well, you can tell another debut novelist in a green room. The one's going, what the hell is this? Why does everyone know each other? What if I say the wrong name to the wrong person?
There's so many muffins.
Yeah. There's always so many muffins.
I tried to say hi to John Safran and it didn't work.
Sometimes it doesn't.
I was a creepy weirdo.
Well, I don't think you would have come across as a creepy
weirdo.
No,
I did.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I can tell you. It was...
Did he tell you?
No, he didn't tell me, but I saw a look in his eyes.
That said.
So I stopped talking very quickly.
Right.
But
sometimes you've got to get a few of those intros out of the way.
Yeah, but it's also like I think that every day. Like I think sitting here it feels like that. Like you're just like, what the heck am I doing? And like on those,
we all do.
On those panels as well.
Yeah.
Like I'm doing a panel at Brisbane Writers Fest and the caliber of people, like I'm on with Tim Costello
yeah.
and this author, she writes Marvel Comics,
yeah,
Eve
wow.
Ewing in America.
Far out.
And me.
No, now see, this is the point where you've got to have a little bit of that fake confidence, right?
Yeah.
And you've got to allow yourself to share the stage.
Yeah, you have to be comfortable though with what role you're playing on
That's
the stage
true.
As well.
That's true.
Because... Yeah, you just have to be comfortable in your skin and just have fun too because it's such a joy. And it is funny. Like, you're like, why am I here? Like,
why
it's so
am I
funny.
Here?
I had a thing with at that festival that you came to with Jesse Ball.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I was a little bit starstruck by Jesse Ball.
I know,
actually.
Right?
He's got that really, really smart.
Really smart, really articulate, really compassionate.
Yeah.
New York accent.
Yeah.
Covered in tats.
Oh, he
looks
the package.
So cool.
Very cool.
And then me. And so my role, like I felt like my role was to be down to earth and just be a guy on the stage who's a bit starstruck because that's who I am.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And I'm comfortable with that. And I like doing that because hopefully it's like a bit of an entry point for audience members to be like, you don't have to be fancy to be a writer. Yeah.
You don't have to be as cool as Jesse Ball.
No.
Let that be a lesson.
I am as cool
us.
As Jesse Ball. Oh, that's Let's true. Be clear.
Sorry. Let's be
but
really clear.
Not in that way.
Not in that way.
Yeah. I'm cool in another way. I'm sure about
you
it.
You totally are. Ben, tell me, we like to finish up giving some advice because we know that we're really good at giving advice. What advice would you give to yourself back then when you were a fresh debut rider with To Become a Whale coming out in the world? What do you wish you had known?
It's something I'm still learning.
Yep.
So it's even talking to myself now.
Good.
But it would be do not place all of your identity on your art, which sounds profound. Maybe I am as cool as Jesse Ball.
Yeah, I think that was a pretty Jesse Ball statement.
I just know that when people negatively review or people aren't reading it or et cetera, if your worth is placed on your art, you're going to be up and down every day. And I still have those moments where you get four people to the library gig and you get those feelings of rejection and all that high school stupid nonsense comes flooding back. And so I would say to have fun and to enjoy writing and care about it deeply. But if I'm getting who I am from it and from people's reactions to it, I think that's a really deadly spiral. And I know I have to keep on convincing myself not to go down those pathways with my mind, because I worry too much and it's like this big vortex of worry and like, why is so-and-so not reading my stuff? They're reading this other person's stuff and they're not posting about my stuff. What the heck? Yeah, it can get bad.
It's a big vortex.
So, and also, I guess, also not to compare myself to other people, because I only ever compare up.
Yep.
Yeah. And so because I was thinking about it today, comparing myself to authors whose books are selling better than my books. And you're just like, but my book's good too. And I feel like I've got this like restaurant that I've set up next to a McDonald's or something. And I'm watching all these people eat McDonald's. I'm like, my burgers
are really good.
I made them with my love.
Yeah.
Come in, just taste it. You'll like it. And they don't taste it. They keep eating Big Macs. And
it's a good analogy.
Yeah. And I know like it's such a blessing to be able to do anything and having even one person read, like I should compare myself to who I was with writing 4 or 3 years ago and think, how fortunate is it that I get to look at a book and come and talk to you? And I need to do that much more than compare to what I don't have.
Even though those feelings are completely and utterly valid, and we all have them.
Yes, they are completely valid.
We're all sitting in a restaurant next to Macca's too.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's the thing though, right? Because I think even you always move the goalposts on yourself.
Yeah, you really do.
You do. And so like if I had told myself 3 years ago that I'd be sitting here doing a podcast on the craft of writing in my second novel, you'd be like, whoa, that's amazing. And who knows where I'll be in 3 years.
Exactly. Yeah. On this really impressive podcast, talking about the craft of writing,
I get
potentially.
To come back, yeah. But it is, it's perspective and it's super important. And I do agree, those feelings are valid and you need to say, I get that about myself and not to feel guilty about it either. But if you just sit in it for too long, it just gets to be bad self-talk, I find.
Very wise, very profound. Before I let you go, I have to ask you to recommend, please, a favourite novel by a debut author.
Wow. You know what? Who I'll say? I'll say, I think Robert Lukens.
Great call.
The Everlasting Sunday.
Actually, I don't think anyone said it yet, so really good call.
That would be, it's a very profound and beautiful piece of art. And I marvel at that book's language. And I marvel at the story and how real it feels. I would definitely say that book.
Excellent.
Actually, that struck me as someone's, and it turns out it was, the 20th book.
Yeah, exactly. All the rest of them are under Robert's bed.
Yeah.
But excellent. Ben, thank you so much. You've been very generous with your insights and your time. Thank you for speaking to us.
My pleasure.
So, Ben, I'm going to ask you your first time quick five.
Yep.
And as you know, you're allowed to pass on any question. For your first time.
Can I interrupt? Sorry.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite parts.
Okay, great.
Of the thing, yeah.
For your first time, were you agented or unagented?
Agented.
Advance or no advance?
Advance.
Overseas territories or just Australia and New Zealand?
France. And
France?
Yes.
Random France.
It's been, yes. Yeah.
What's it called?
Oh, no. La Croissant, no, La Rive de la Baleine. So it's actually called The Dream of the Whale.
Oh, nice.
I know. And this is actually about the acknowledgements thing we were talking about.
Yeah.
My acknowledgement to my wife is now in French.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
I know.
Did you get that like in a plane
or
something?
I should do that. Yeah,
don't tell her. Don't listen to this. Okay. Festival invites or no festival invites?
Festival invites. I got to go to Brisbane Writers Festival.
Yeah.
And the Byron Writers Festival.
Also a nice green room.
And I got to do, yes. And I got to do the Byron Writers Road Trip.
Oh my gosh, did you?
Yes.
I always look at that and think that is.
It was so fun.
So much fun.
It was really cool.
Excellent. And do you know how many copies they've sold?
I think 3,000.
Fantastic. Yeah. And you wouldn't yet know on Snake Island.
No.
Ben, thanks for playing the first time Quick Five.
My pleasure.
You can find the show notes for today's episode on our website, thefirsttimepodcast.com. Get in touch with us via Instagram or Twitter at @thefirsttimepod, or you can leave us a message on the website. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast, a podcast about the first and second time you publish a book. We recorded this episode at RMIT University on the traditional land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. This podcast is produced by Phoebe 80. The First Time Podcast is supported by Writers Victoria, ACT Writers Centre, RMIT School of Media and Communication, and by our wonderful supporters on Patreon. You too can become a supporter of our podcast by heading to our Patreon site, www.patreon.com/thefirsttimepodcast.